Welcome to episode 219 of the Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com for Sunday, May 20th, 2012. I am the Solomonster. We were going to have China on the show this week, but I'm told she's passed out yet again, so that will not be happening. Before we begin, I want to start by mentioning that today, May 20th, marks the one-year anniversary of the death of Macho Man Randy Savage, who passed away after suffering a massive heart attack. It's almost impossible to believe that it's been a year. Really hasn't felt that long, but it has been easily among the biggest deaths in wrestling history from a media point of view. It got coverage all over the place. Time Magazine even had Vince McMahon write a short piece about Savage's career, which, given the animosity between the two of them, mostly from Vince's end over the years, could not have been an easy thing for him to do, but he did it. One thing that brings a smile to my face are the Randy Savage chants whenever someone performs a flying elbow smash off the top rope. Whether it be CM Punk or even the Big Show back at Survivor Series, where I had the opportunity to be there live and to see Madison Square Garden erupt into Randy Savage chants, or to be there live for Raw after WrestleMania in Miami, and we had a Macho Man impersonator down in the front row and Randy Savage chants littering the arena. Really, really cool stuff. It's just nice to see the guy, his name, his legacy live on in that way. One of the greatest of all time. No longer with us, and that's a sad thing. Also want to mention here at the top of the show that myself and Noah Mark are planning to be back tomorrow night for another edition of SE Scoops Live, 1 hour before Monday Night Raw, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can tune in to the main page at SEScoops.com. There'll be all the information you need. There'll probably be a live stream up there as well. We hope things will go a little bit smoother than they did initially last time. But we had fun last month after Extreme Rules doing the show. We'll do it again tomorrow night with Raw going to 3 hours. Enjoy it while you can, because we're not going to be able to do these anymore. But I just wanted to let everybody know. If you have questions, we'll be taking live listener calls as well. It's a one-hour show. We go off the air once Raw goes on the air, so we're kind of limited in our time, but we'll be going over the limit results, any other big news. We'll be taking your calls, the call-in number, all of that stuff will be posted. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I'll have information up there as well. So myself and Noah on the air tomorrow night for another edition of SE Scoops Live, 1 hour before Monday Night Raw. Speaking of Over the Limit, may as well start with that, since tonight is the big Over the Limit pay-per-view. I believe it's in Raleigh, North Carolina. So in the Carolinas, Flair country, if you will. And the big main event is, yet again, not for the WWE Championship or the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, depends how you look at it. I guess there are a lot of people, myself included, very excited at the prospect of a 20 or 30 minute long CM Punk Daniel Bryan match. To a lot of people, that may well be the main event of Over the Limit. But in WWE's eyes, I'm almost positive that the final match on the show, the real main event of the show, is going to be John Cena and John Laurinaitis, which would probably make this, I'm trying to go back and see here, when the last time the WWE or world title was defended in the true main event at a pay-per-view, you'd probably have to go all the way back to December, would be my guess. I believe that was the CM Punk Del Rio Miz Triple Threat ladder match at TLC for the championship. It didn't main event at the Rumble, obviously. It didn't main event at Elimination Chamber. You had Kane and John Cena. WrestleMania was Rock and John Cena. And Extreme Rules, you had Cena and Brock Lesnar. You see a pattern developing here? John Cena has become the main event all by himself. The guy doesn't even need the World Championship, which is what I've been saying for years. The guy doesn't need the title to be the top guy. But on the flip side, you almost wonder if they should put the belt back on him, because it just makes the belt look so meaningless and so kind of not completely worthless, but it just makes the belt seem like nothing special when you have big event after big event and your championship match is second or third match down from the top. So looks like we're going to have that again at Over the Limit. Cena and Laurinaitis is the main event. I'm going to have a lot to say about this and that wretched segment. In fact, that whole wretched show from Monday night. I'm going to get into that in a second. But as far as the match on pay-per-view, is it going to go in favor of Cena? Will Laurinaitis, as a character, as the general manager, finally be done? I don't buy it. I don't buy it because this so-called people power era, this era of John Laurinaitis in power, really hasn't been going on for that long. Technically, it started at WrestleMania. And for them to kind of end it 2 months later seems a bit premature to me. Not that I would not be in favor of it. I think it's already played out. But I just can't see Laurinaitis losing the match. They've done everything in their power to make it very obvious that John Cena would be kicking this guy's ass and going over. Almost so obvious that you expect a swerve of some kind. Stipulation is that if Laurinaitis, anybody interferes, any WWE superstar interferes in the match, they will be fired. If Laurinaitis loses the match, he will be fired. The only way to win is by pinfall or submission. I don't believe there are any DQs or countouts. So the odds are stacked in John Cena's favor, which usually means trouble for the babyface when that is the case. My whole thing is this. A lot of people are predicting that Big Show will probably be involved in this match in some way, either some sort of heel turn where he aligns with John Laurinaitis, or perhaps in an effort to get his job back, which he lost on Monday night, perhaps against his will, he might help John Laurinaitis win. So not turning heel, necessarily, but reluctantly helping Laurinaitis beat Cena so he can try to get his job back. Not unlike the angle they did last year or the year before, I think, with Wade Barrett in the Nexus when Cena was forced to join the Nexus against his will, which was another completely ridiculous bullshit angle. So you can go either way with that. Big Show is technically no longer a WWE superstar. There's your loophole right there. He can interfere without the risk of being fired. In fact, he can interfere with the hope and expectation that he may be rehired. And that could very well happen. But to me, again, it just seems way too obvious. And it seems to go against what WWE has been doing a lot of late, which is, you know, let's do the opposite of what might make sense because people are already expecting it. So if people are expecting Big Show to interfere, then perhaps it won't be Big Show. I was thinking Dave Bautista is an interesting possibility just because it would make sense. I believe Bautista when he says that he just has no interest in being a part of the current WWE, the PG WWE, which is kind of funny he would say that given that they first went PG back in 07, 08, and Bautista had some pretty good years in that time. If he really wanted out that badly, he probably could have gotten out, but he opted to stay. But you know, Bautista, the last time we saw him in a match was against John Cena at this very pay-per-view. I mean, maybe it wasn't called Over the Limit at the time, but it was in May of 2010, I believe, when Cena and Bautista had their big match, and Cena gave him the attitude adjustment off the stage, and Bautista hurt his tailbone, I think, the next night he quit. So you've got the history there with Cena and Bautista at this very show, no less. And Bautista could probably fill that role of henchman for John Laurinaitis just as good as anybody else would. And perhaps he's willing to come back under the right circumstances. You know, they signed Brock Lesnar to a very special deal with certain provisions and, you know, X number of dates, and it's only for a year. And I could see Bautista agreeing to a deal like that. If they're so hard on trying to get more star power, and you've got this former world champion just kind of floundering out there, why not try to bring him back? So I haven't heard anything in that direction. I'm just saying Bautista would be something out of left field that not everybody would be expecting, and it would make sense. You could do it, and in a way it's kind of a swerve, but it's a swerve that makes sense. So at least it that could work. So I'm just throwing that out there as a wild, crazy idea. Perhaps Bautista comes back. Maybe it is Big Show, but either way, I think the outcome is the same. I don't see Laurinaitis losing this match. He may get his ass handed to him, but I don't see him walking out the loser in this match. We've got CM Punk and Daniel Bryan for the WWE Championship, which should be easily the show stealer. I guess we'll see. Depends how much time they give them. And the problem, it's not really a problem, I guess, but we've seen this match several times already this year. If you remember a couple months ago, they put Punk and Bryan together on Raw, and I think SmackDown, too. They had like three or four straight matches on TV. You'll never hear me complain about that because they were all good to great matches. I'm sure this one will be no different. If anything, this match should have even more time than that. It's your main championship up for grabs. It's pay-per-view. Give these guys 20 or 25 minutes to go out there and just do what they do best. And I guarantee you, by the end of that match, the fans will not be sitting on their hands. Will AJ factor into this match in some way? They kind of teased that on Raw Monday night. My expectation would be that she would be there. But then again, I thought that she would probably factor into the match at WrestleMania. At Extreme Rules. She was at the pay-per-view. Never mentioned again. Didn't show up during the Sheamus-Bryan match. So who knows? She looks like she's going to just explode at any moment. I actually like her character, right? She's got this element of you know, kind of, this woman is crazy, you don't know what she's going to do next. I only hope that it doesn't kind of mar, if they have a great match that gets marred in some way by bullshit interference at the end, if it's like a disqualification, that would kind of, I think, bring the match down a few notches. I'm going to go with CM Punk here. I don't see any reason to take the title off of him. I cannot see them putting the WWE belt on Bryan. I think they took the other championship off him for a reason. You take the title off him, he just loses to Sheamus all the time. You make him look somewhat weak. So then you just move him over to Raw and give him the WWE title. This doesn't make any sense to me. And Punk has had a nice reign. You know, if you think about it, Punk has been champion now since November. At Survivor Series, where I was. He beat Del Rio to win the championship back. I think Michael Cole made a comment on Raw about how Punk has been champion for 4 months, which that's some of that fuzzy WWE math there, because if that's the case, from, let's see, November to May, I think that's a little bit more than 4 months that he's been champion, Mr. Cole. I think it's been probably like, what is that, 1, 2, 3, I don't know, 6 months. Anyway, point is, I don't see the title coming off Punk so soon. I think they can keep it on him for a while longer. So I'm going to go with CM Punk in that match. Sheamus, Orton, Jericho, Del Rio. Fatal 4-Way. World Heavyweight Championship on the line. Originally, it was going to be Sheamus and Del Rio. They figured, listen, we got two guys here, and Orton and Jericho, that have nothing to do. From what I understand, Jericho's on his way out. I'm not saying this will be his last show. My guess would be that he would at least stay until Raw. Maybe he will be around for another pay-per-view. But from what I understand, Jericho was going to be on his way out very soon. I don't know what sense it would be to put the title on him in this place, but... you know, Sheamus, to me, again, why take the title off him? You had him beat Bryan. I loved that match last month at the pay-per-view. I thought it was easily the match of the show, and they made Sheamus look really good. And you know, keep the belt on him for a little while. Make him look strong. There's no reason for him to drop it in this match. I know it's very easy for them to consider that, because you could have the champion lose without really losing. But that doesn't do anybody any good. It's all bullshit. They'll probably put the belt back on him anyway. So I say just keep it on him. Sheamus finds a way to retain the World Heavyweight title. We have Layla defending her Divas Championship in a rematch against Beth Phoenix. I'm going to go with Layla in this case. Again, why put the title on her for a month and then just take it off? It's not like she's getting over. She's just kind of there as a champion. I think we're all just kind of biding our time until they figure out what the hell they're going to do with Karma. Maybe she shows up. I don't know, but... I'm going to go with Layla in that match. Tag team titles on the line. Kofi Kingston and R-Truth defend against Jack Swagger and Dolph Ziggler. I'm going to go with Kingston and Truth in this one. I want Dolph Ziggler away from meaningless bullshit tag team matches. I want them to find something for this guy as a single star that he could really sink his teeth into. And Ziggler actually went on Twitter this week and made an interesting comment. And I'd be curious if he just did this on his own or if WWE actually has an idea for this and told him to go out there and say it. But he's teasing the fact that on the 1,000th episode of Raw, which is coming up on July 23rd, that'll be the first three-hour Raw for good. And again, I'll talk about that in a second. Ziggler is teasing that he wants to have an Iron Man match. Now, he didn't say 60-minute Iron Man match. And WWE has had at least one 30-minute Iron Man match before. That was with Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels on Raw. So just because he said Iron Man match does not mean it would be a full hour. Just keep that in mind. But... he is teasing that he wants to have an Iron Man match with somebody. He's asking somebody to step up and accept his challenge for the July 23rd Raw. See, you know, Dolph Ziggler in an Iron Man match with somebody could be a hell of a match. Quite frankly, I think Dolph Ziggler and John Cena could be a good feud. If for no other reason, just because I'd like to see Cena get in there with some of the younger guys. I actually had the chance to ask Cena about that during the WrestleMania press conference in Miami before the show. And I asked him, listen, is there anybody on the roster that you look at that you see as having the real potential to become the next big breakout star, to work with somebody that you haven't really had the chance to work with yet? And the only specific name he threw out there was Cody Rhodes. And I would agree with him, except that they've made Cody Rhodes look like a complete goofball for the last month or two, really ever since WrestleMania. But Cody has a big upside, but so does Ziggler. And I think Cena and Ziggler could be something down the road. Maybe Cena accepts the challenge. I saw one person email me and ask me if they were going to, you know, revive that whole Mick Foley, Dolph Ziggler, not feud, but if you remember, there was that one Raw where Ziggler got up in Foley's face. The idea of Mick Foley in an Iron Man match, really? Does anybody believe for a second that Mick Foley would agree to be in a 60-minute match? I don't think Mick Foley should be in a 6-minute match anymore, let alone 60, so... I would suspect it will not be him. But anyway, I'm going to go with Kingston and R-Truth here. And then the pre-show match on YouTube is going to be Kane and Zack Ryder. This is a match, by the way, that I thought they could have promoted for WrestleMania. Had they put the U.S. title on Kane, who continued to torture poor Zack, Zack could have gone to WrestleMania, gotten his revenge, and his one big win on Kane. But somewhere along the way, they decided, you know what? Zack had his moment in the sun. He's done. You know, he was kind of the flavor of the month. Now he's just beaten every week, made to look like a complete job guy. I would suspect that Kane is not going to be pinned by Zack Ryder on this pre-show match. Although it is the pre-show. So, you know, they could always have Zack beat Kane and, you know, 75,000 people maybe would see it. But obviously I'm going with Kane in this match. Kane by death. So that's your Over the Limit card for the pay-per-view tonight. I will probably try to check that out so we can review it on SE Scoops Live before Raw this Monday night. Speaking of Raw, let's break into that next. Raw, this past Monday night, was a show that emanated from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The place where Undertaker sent Mankind soaring off the top of the Hell in a Cell, and probably the single most amazing moment I've ever witnessed during a wrestling match, even to this day. I still remember where I was and what my reaction was when I saw him throw Foley off that cage, and it's something I never want to see again, but for the moment, it was something else. It was something else, and it's also the place where Bret Hart once said that if you were to give the United States an enema, you would stick the hose in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That was a comment that he later admits he regretted making. I would have preferred someone shove a stick of dynamite into this show on Monday and blow it to smithereens. Sadly, nobody did, so I guess I'll just have to do that myself. I would say that if you are currently streaming this show, download it instead and save it for posterity. Play it for your grandkids. They may not have any idea what the hell they're listening to, but who cares? It'll be fun. It's kind of like whenever I put on Telemundo and watch the commercials. Entertaining as hell, because I'm going to say some things about Raw that I think need to be heard. I need to vent about this show. It's been a while since I've really vented about a horrible Raw. We've had some bad Raw shows. We've had some pretty good Raw shows. They're so inconsistent. I think I've described Raw before as being bipolar, you know, kind of Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know what you're going to get when you watch it. Maybe they do that on purpose. Maybe they want to keep people on their toes. They don't want people to think every week they're going to get a good show. So they go out of their way some weeks to script the most absolutely atrocious piece of shit show they could possibly script. That's the only possible logical conclusion I come to, because this show on Monday night was the go-home show to the Over the Limit pay-per-view. It was the final edition of Raw that was supposed to get you to want to spend your hard-earned money on this pay-per-view. And to me, it's too bad they didn't do a single thing that would make anyone want to buy that show, at least not anybody who had not already decided they were buying it anyway. If anybody was on the fence, I think I've made this comment before, they're probably still sitting on that fence right now. I don't see how anybody who was thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll want to watch this pay-per-view, but let's see what they do on Raw. I can't see how anybody would actually watch that show and think, you know, goddamn, I got to see this pay-per-view on Monday. And it wasn't just the last segment of this show, which absolutely infuriated me. This entire show just felt like a colossal waste of time, which again is one of the many reasons that, and I'm going to get into this, but 3 hours of Raw every single week has me very concerned. When the best thing on the entire show is a Santino Marella comedy spot, I think that says it all right there. I think that says it all. We had Triple H come out, start the show. He was wearing a brace on his arm. He immediately blew off the injury, by the way, the broken arm that he has, as nothing special. He said he's had worse. And you can say that he has had worse. He's had two torn quads. But why in God's name would you say that? The man broke your arm, and you treat it like a paper cut. That was dumb. Then, even better, he takes credit for having seen the talent in Brock Lesnar during his first run of the company, which I thought was rich. He talked about Lesnar being a quitter in everything he's ever done, saying that when things got tough, he quit WWE in 2004. When things got tough in the UFC, he quit, and now he's quit yet again. And I had more of a problem with him minimizing his injury than I did with this, because a lot of what he said here is actually true. Granted, Brock's surgery, the diverticulitis, all that had more to do with his retiring from UFC than him you know, not wanting to face the competition, but it's a storyline and they have creative license to embellish as they see fit. I think Muhammad from our Facebook page may have nailed it when he predicted Lesnar versus Triple H at SummerSlam or whenever the hell they do the match will be an I Quit match. You know, it certainly makes sense after this promo talking about quitting. He quit this, he quit that. I could see an I Quit match, which would make it even worse because I've predicted that Triple H will beat Brock Lesnar. So it's bad enough for him to pin Brock Lesnar, but if that were to happen and he actually made Brock Lesnar quit and essentially submit in a match, that would not be good. Paul Heyman came out with a lawyer in tow, served papers to Triple H because Brock Lesnar is now suing WWE for breach of contract, I guess. So I guess this is WWE's way of ultimately beating Brock in a fake lawsuit since Brock beat them in court in real life. This is classic Vince McMahon on display here. Remember the time in, God, it was probably 07 or 08. Remember the Denver debacle when they had a date for Raw for this arena and they got bumped because of an NBA game? The owner of the arena is also like the owner of the NBA team or something. And obviously, you know, the Nuggets... Nobody expected the Nuggets, I think, to make it that far, but they did, and so wrestling got bumped for an NBA game, and Vince blew a gasket, and it was this whole big thing. And remember Vince McMahon's response to that? He had the E! Stan Kroenke impersonator on Raw, just so he can make fun of him and shove him down as, like, his form of revenge. Just thought that's just what I thought of here, just in terms of how Vince McMahon likes to take real-life losses and then incorporate them into fantasy, so if he lost in real life... He can win, I guess, in his fake little bubble that he's created for himself. So, Triple H grabbed Paul Heyman with his one good arm, and Paul was actually pretty funny here. He was saying, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then Hunter backed off and left, and Heyman said that he now had two lawsuits to contend with, one from Brock and one from him for putting his hands on him. And Paul is very good in this role, and I do hope that he is in Brock's corner for his matches going forward. But this is going to get old really fast. If all you're going to do is have him come out every week and yak and talk about lawsuits and this and that, you know, for now it's fine because he just came back. But again, you run the risk of this getting old very fast. So I hope they've got something planned. I hope that Brock maybe in another week or two, you know, you can, I mean, Brock, you got to be careful with how many dates you use him for. But you can bring him back now and then. But you fired the guy. And the guy is suing the company. So now how do you... get out of that hole that you created for yourself where all of a sudden Brock Lesnar is going to show up on Raw. Doesn't make sense. This is what I'm talking about. They don't think these things through. CM Punk and Santino Marella beat Cody Rhodes and Daniel Bryan. They did a spot here where Santino was being beaten down forever. Finally went for the hot tag, and when he did the dive towards Punk, he fell short of it and landed flat on his face. And I laughed. The fans laughed. I laughed. It was a clever spot. Probably the most entertaining thing on the entire show. Punk ended up nailing Cody with the GTS, got the pin. Bryan had bailed up the ramp, and so he stared down Punk after the match. This is going to rule. I think this match will rule between Punk and Bryan on the pay-per-view. I hope I'm right. Beth Phoenix beat Alicia Fox. She also attacked her after the match. Layla then came out and made the save. Nobody cared about this at all, by the way. And those of you following me on Twitter saw that I actually used my stopwatch on my iPhone to time this match, and I am pleased to report that it actually went more than a minute. Not by much, it went about a minute and 20 seconds, but it is an improvement over the women's matches from recent weeks. Kane and Big Show had a match. At least it wasn't Kali. It's the best thing I could say about it. John Laurinaitis was watching from ringside with David Otunga. David Otunga was back with his bow tie and his thermos. I'm not going to say anything snarky about the dude this week, just because he's been by his wife's side with the trial and that whole horrible situation with what happened to her family, so Otunga has my respect for that. Laurinaitis decided that while this match was still in progress, this would be a fine time to demand an apology from the Big Show. This proved to be too much of a distraction for the big guy. He allowed himself to be choke-shoved by Kane. I refuse to call this a choke slam. This was a choke-shove. I don't know what happened here. I looked like Kane thought that Big Show was going to try to, you know, jump up maybe for a choke slam and get some height on it, and instead of jumping up, he just kind of fell backwards. And it looked terrible. Just a horrible fucking finish to this match. Not as horrible as what came next. Then came the angle where John Laurinaitis fired the Big Show. And you've all seen it by now. I don't need to give you the play-by-play. If I gave you the play-by-play on this one segment, I'd be here for 4 hours. This went on forever. Forever. It would not end. Big Show begged. He groveled. He cried for his job. He said he didn't need it, but he loves what he does. And he wants to remain a WWE superstar. And I will give them credit for at least taking the time to explain that. You know, Big Show only did this because he loves it. He doesn't need it. He loves it. But it still made no sense. Why somebody like the Big Show, who has been a main eventer for his entire career, from the moment he set foot in WCW, he was a top guy. All throughout his WWE, most of his WWE run, there's been plenty of times where I guess he's been pushed down the card, but he's made millions of dollars. And this guy feels compelled, at 40 years old and after everything he's accomplished, to get down on his knees, crocodile tears streaming down his face, and beg for his job, as though he just got a bad evaluation from the judges during the TNA gut check, like some rookie. It's completely preposterous. Just like when Shawn Michaels had to go work as JBL's slave because he made some bad investments and all of a sudden he was destitute. Or, you know, when John Cena, I mentioned earlier, had to join the Nexus and do all those demoralizing things every single week, as though any of us really believed that anything bad would happen to John Cena had he just told Wade Barrett to go fuck himself and just beat them all up. There have been some goddamn ridiculous angles in the history of WWE, and while this one is not at the top of the list, it's definitely on the list. Now, I will say, though, that I thought Big Show did a hell of a job with what he was given. As I said in the main page mailbag that went up on SC Scoops this week, the big guy's got some acting chops, and he is a beloved figure in WWE, and from their point of view, it was a way to get some real heel heat on Laurinaitis. I don't think they had to do this, but that's where I assume that's where they're coming from. See, I think the way that WCW did it with Eric Bischoff and Randy Anderson years ago on Nitro is actually a much better example of how you get heel heat on an asshole authority figure. Have them pick on and embarrass the little guy. You know, the helpless, defenseless, weak individual. Just like Bischoff did while he was with the NWO, and they had referee Randy Anderson come out on Nitro and bring out his wife and his kids and beg for his job, and Bischoff just told him to go screw. You know, not by having a 7-foot, 400-pound main event attraction blubbering like a baby in the middle of the ring, down on his knees with a pained expression on his face, looking like a constipated whale praying for a bowel movement. The other thing is that this segment also came at the top of the 10 p.m. hour, which is an important one for WWE, and the reason this segment dragged on for 5 lifetimes is because they wanted to really stretch out the drama and pop a big quarter. And they succeeded. The segment gained over 1 million viewers. 1 million people tuned in at some point during the course of this 20-minute segment or whatever it was. That's a lot of people. I should also point out that the Brodus Clay, Truth, Kingston, Ziggler, Swagger, Miz, Six-Man that followed this proceeded to lose nearly all 1 million of those viewers they had gained, which is just terrible. Just absolutely terrible. Anyway, long story short, I hated this. Big Show did the best he could with it. He's very good at getting sympathy and all of that. But this sucked. This sucked. And when they came back from break after the Big Show segment, they did the really somber shot from ringside with Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler speaking in their low voices like somebody just died in the ring. And they proceed to immediately go from this to, "Let's dance, everybody! It's time for the Funkasaurus!" Worst segue in history. Right there. Brodus hit the big splash on Miz to win that match, by the way, that I mentioned for his team. It took 4 months. I was thinking about this. It took 4 months, but the shine is off Brodus Clay for me. I no longer enjoy his segments the way that I used to. So I admit, I was wrong in thinking that this character would get over big. I still think it could have. But they never really gave him that mean streak that the character needed to show every now and then, and they still haven't put him in any sort of meaningful feud or given him any real promo time. I mean, they've killed him. You can tell they've sort of given up on him because when he comes out now, they make it a point to announce Naomi and Cameron by name. Like they're the big stars of the act, not Brodus. I mean, maybe their goal all along was to get the women over instead. It's too bad they treat their women's division like shit because Naomi is actually a really good wrestler. We had a segment backstage with CM Punk and AJ. AJ wished Punk luck in his match against Bryan on Sunday. And Punk was not falling for her act, said she was unstable, and walked away. And AJ had this great look on her face, like she could just snap at any moment. And I would suspect that, as I said before, she may be involved in the finish of the Punk-Bryan match. I almost hope she isn't, but I still think Punk retains the title. Chris Jericho beat Randy Orton by DQ after Sheamus, who was doing commentary at ringside, interfered. He attacked Jericho. Last time we saw Jericho and Orton in a singles match on Raw, Jericho got punted in the head and disappeared for over a year. So this was his big revenge. After the match, Sheamus and Orton argued at ringside. They went back into the ring to fight. A bunch of referees came down to break things up. I heard their match on SmackDown this week went nearly half an hour and was pretty damn good. I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet, so I hope to do that later. Then John Laurinaitis came back out again for the main event of this show. He was babbling on about something I don't remember. I was already zoning out at this point. And they want to give us 3 hours of this shit every week. So we had soon-to-be single John Cena come out. He gave easily the most obnoxious promo he has ever done in the history of Monday Night Raw. And think about all of the ground that that covers. If this is the happy John Cena that we're going to get every week on TV, now that he's getting divorced, I will gladly pay for marriage counseling for him and Mrs. Cena so they can get back together. I don't have much. I will tap into my 401k if I have to. This was the absolute dirt-worst segment. And for those adults in Pittsburgh, for them to actually cheer this, because this thing got a lot of great applause and laughter and cheers from the crowd, for them to cheer this, it makes me ashamed to be a fan. Forget the kids. I would expect that out of them. That's fine. But the adults? Cena was imitating Jim Carrey's shtick from the movie Ace Ventura, I guess. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've seen the movie. He would constantly interrupt Laurinaitis when he tried to speak. He would call him a loser, but he would do so in the most over-the-top, annoying way possible, complete with dumbass facial expressions to go with it. Words cannot adequately express how much I fucking hated this segment. I hated everything about it. It represents everything that is wrong with WWE today. It represents everything about why I hate the move to 3 hours. If they gave us great matches and great promos, ones that were actually funny and entertaining, because I'm not against, you know, backstage segments or promos, if they're funny, if they're entertaining, I would love getting more Raw on Monday nights. But we're not going to get that. We're going to get more of this shit. And that's why I think it's a horrible idea. Besides that, what sense does it make for Laurinaitis to take such abuse from John Cena when he fired the Big Show for making fun of his voice and has everybody else in the company walking on eggshells around him? Why? Because they have a match on Sunday? So what? Then tell Cena after their match on Sunday, win or lose, you're fired. Not that anybody's going to believe it anyway, but he just let Cena interrupt him. He actually looked like he was trying hard not to laugh, Laurinaitis. It looked like he was about to just bust a gut during this segment. How am I supposed to take the 35-minute segment from earlier with Big Show, which they also replayed 12 times, by the way, how am I supposed to take that seriously when you turn around an hour later and you feed us this crap? It's just amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. Eve came out to inform Laurinaitis that they received a memo from the board of directors. And Cena literally ripped the page out of his hands and he read it out loud. And the board ruled that their match on Sunday would have no special referee, no superstars would be allowed to interfere. I said this earlier, match can only end by pinfall, submission, and all that. Why do we need a GM, by the way, if the board of directors can just make match stipulations? Why not just leave the big decisions to the board and get rid of this whole GM concept? Why ask why? Why am I even asking? Laurinaitis slaps Cena in the face. He walked off, which just made him the biggest babyface in the entire company as far as I'm concerned. Every single fan watching this should have been on their feet clapping for Laurinaitis when he did that. Never has a man deserved to be slapped more than John Cena in this segment. They closed the show with a shot of Cena all mad. Why? Because he got slapped? He comes out all happy and jolly, cracking jokes, and then gets slapped and he's mad? Fuck this show. This sucked. Which brings me to the big announcement that WWE made this week. Monday Night Raw will be celebrating its 1,000th episode this summer, July 23rd to be exact. And that will be a 3-hour edition of Raw, which we get a couple of times each year. But this will mark the beginning of the permanent expansion of Raw to 3 hours each and every Monday night starting July 23rd. Raw will be 3 hours every single week. Now, I've said before how whenever there's a three-hour Raw, I dread it. Because more often than not, those shows are no good. I mean, every now and then they may get lucky. I don't remember if that old-school Raw they did in 2010 was a three-hour show. I think it might have been a three-hour show, actually. And that was a damn fine episode of Raw, but that was a novelty. You know, it was a gimmick. More often than not, they would try to come up with gimmicks like that. They've had, you know, back years ago, they had the King of the Ring tournament, which I was really looking forward to. They were bringing back King of the Ring, and it was going to be a three-hour Raw gimmick, and they completely just fucked that one up. That was when William Regal won. He beat, like, Hornswoggle in 30 seconds, and I think he beat CM Punk, actually, in the finals, but it was in, like, 3 or 4 minutes. It was a complete waste. So they try to come up with ideas, which is great. I think they should try to come up with ideas. But I've always heard that the three-hour Raw shows were not something that Vince McMahon or WWE wanted. It was a USA Network call. USA Network wanted these three-hour Raw specials. Maybe it was around sweeps time, I don't know. And Vince McMahon in the past has suggested that 90 minutes is the ideal length of time for a wrestling show. 90 minutes. An hour is too short, 2 hours is too long. Well, now we get 3 hours of Raw every single week. And I feel sorry for the people who have to, you know, work in the company, whether it's in a writing capacity or a production capacity, having to prepare for these shows every single week, especially coming off a pay-per-view. I mean, that's got to be just absolutely awful. I can only imagine what these people must be thinking to themselves. I'm sure they're not jumping with joy that Raw is going 3 hours. And as much of a WWE fan as I am, a wrestling fan as I am, I too am not jumping for joy. And I see people saying, well, if you're a real wrestling fan, you've got to be happy about this. How could you not like the fact that Raw is going to 3 hours? That is precisely the reason why I am not excited. Because I am a wrestling fan. Because I see things for how they really are. And what I'm going to do here is I'm not going to be all negative. I'm going to list some reasons why this could potentially be a good move, and I'm going to talk about why this will be a bad move. Call me a cynic. You can say that I'm just being pessimistic. You know, all I'm doing is ranting and raving. I don't give it a chance. I'm going to give it a chance. I have no choice but to give it a chance. But I look back at the way they've handled these three-hour Raws before, and just more often than not, the way they conduct themselves. And I can guarantee you, that first week may be an amazing show. Maybe Dolph Ziggler will have an Iron Man match for the first hour, and it'll be awesome. But you know what? I expect that show to be awesome, because it's the 1,000th episode. They'll probably have some old guys coming back for cameos. I'm sure it'll be a really special night. What I'm worried about is week 2, and week 3, and week 4. 3, 6, 9, 12 hours of Raw in the weeks after that. That's what I'm worried about. You can only give people so much. I mean, how much content can you really give people in one day? For how long can people sit there and watch wrestling each and every Monday night? Why don't you just make Raw 6 hours long while you're at it? I think there's a limit to how much wrestling somebody can get, particularly when a lot of what you see on Monday nights is not good. Let's just face facts here. Raw can be, you know, Raw can have a great week and be followed up by 3 weeks of complete garbage. Of all the times for them to have 3 hours, I mean, at the peak of the Attitude Era, if they would have said, you know what, Raw's going to 3 hours, I'm sure most people would have been like, hell yeah. But guess what? Those days are gone, and the Attitude Era wasn't all a bed of roses either, if you look back at some of the crap we got back then. Didn't seem like it, but you look back in hindsight, and for all the great stuff, there was a lot of garbage. But I think you could excuse the garbage because the good stuff was great. And because back then you had all these different main event guys, they didn't treat it like a complete joke. You know, when Stone Cold was at his apex, he also had The Rock as part of his supporting cast, Triple H, Mankind, Undertaker, characters that people could actually be invested in, that they cared about. Then Jericho and Angle and Benoit and all these other people came in who could actually work. So now you had great matches on top of that. But everything wasn't treated like a joke. I mean, you'd have The Rock, he would cut the same, you know, jokes that you'll expect to hear The Rock cut. Jericho would come out and call Stephanie McMahon a trash bag hoe, and you had all that stuff. But they didn't treat the championship. They didn't treat their main feuds like a joke. Everything's a joke now. John Cena comes out and he's joking. Everybody comes out and they're joking. Everything's just one big giant laugh. If they expanded Saturday Night Live to 3 hours, I don't think a lot of people would appreciate that very much, because there's only so much of that you could have. And I don't see WWE doing things to make you want to tune in for that first hour. I see them really, I just see them trying to fill up an hour with crap, quite frankly. That's what I'm concerned about. That's why I don't think this is a good move. Let's start with the bad reasons, the potentially bad reasons with Raw being expanded to 3 hours and the damage that they could really do long-term to their company. First of all, I just personally feel that 3 hours is just too long for a weekly wrestling show. A pay-per-view, WrestleMania, 3-4 hours, fine. That's a special event. For Raw, for SmackDown, for you know, Nitro back in the day, Impact, Thunder, for any of those shows to be 3 hours, I just think it's too long. And now, I can barely tolerate 2 hours on most weeks. You want to give me a third hour? Are you kidding me? Number two, oversaturation. On pay-per-view weeks, and it feels like they've got a pay-per-view every 2 weeks, but on pay-per-view weeks, you will have a 3-hour pay-per-view on Sunday. Now you will have a 3-hour Raw the next night on Monday. You've got 2 hours of SmackDown on Tuesday, which airs on Friday. You still have NXT and Superstars, either on WWE.com or on TV. I know in other countries, NXT, I think, is still on television. You've got all these different shows. At some point, I mean, look what's going on right now with UFC. That's a great example. UFC was, you know, on top of the world 2 years ago. And now, while it's still popular, it's not nearly as popular as it was. Pay-per-view buy rates are not nearly as impressive as they used to be. And part of it also is this new deal with Fox that UFC has. A lot of their shows air on networks like Fuel, which a lot of people don't have. And the ratings for UFC shows and their primetime specials and the Ultimate Fighter reality show is nothing compared to what it was on Spike. So they've got their own issues as far as Fox is concerned. But UFC just isn't as hot. It's hot, but it's not, if that makes any sense. And a big part of that is because way too many shows. I mean, there are some weeks that I don't even realize there's a UFC pay-per-view or there's some other UFC show from Australia on TV, and it's like, I didn't even know about this. And I try to keep pretty good tabs on all the big shows coming up, and it's a big problem for them. Well, guess what? It's a big problem for wrestling as well. The oversaturation hit wrestling first many years ago, and UFC didn't learn from that. Yet another example of not learning from the mistakes of others. I just think it's way too much. And it's way too much of a product that just isn't that good on most weeks. The third bad reason, potentially, this gives WWE more time, not for great matches or compelling television, it gives them an extra hour for stupid skits and backstage segments. And this is another reason why I have every right, if I want to be pessimistic about this, to be pessimistic. The reason is, when I watch a 3-hour Raw, the reason most of the time that I just don't enjoy it and I feel like it's a chore, like I'm doing homework, like I have to watch it, because I want to review it for my show, and so therefore I have no choice but to sit through it, is because they don't take the extra 60 minutes that they have, or 40-something minutes if you take commercials out of it, whatever it is. They don't take that extra time and give you something to really be happy about. They don't give you a reason to get excited for the next 2 hours coming up. Maybe every now and then they will, but more often than not, they don't. It's just more crap. It's a drawn-out in-ring segment that really is completely pointless, and you could probably condense into 5 minutes. Go to commercial, come back. We have a backstage segment with comedy. Go back to commercial, come back from break. You have a 2-minute match. One thing that always strikes me about these 3-hour shows, I think if you go back and look at them, a lot of the matches are still relatively brief, but you have an extra hour. You have an extra hour, and you still give us 4-minute matches? I'm not expecting a 30-minute match, but for God's sakes, take advantage of the extra time that you have. Give us one or two really exciting matches that get people to tune into your show and watch all the other stuff. It just seems like common sense to me, but they never do that. Those are the main reasons why I think this is a horrible move. It's one thing to have a 3-hour special 4 times a year, 5 times a year, but to do it every single week. And the thing that I don't understand is, I don't know whose call, ultimately it was USA Network's call. Was it something Vince McMahon pushed for? I can't envision it, because again, it just seems to go against everything that Vince McMahon would be in favor of. He wouldn't be in favor of expanding Raw. He would be in favor of either keeping it as is, or maybe even shortening it a little bit. But times have changed. Maybe his opinion has changed. That's supposedly the way Vince McMahon felt 10 years ago. Maybe he feels differently now, because they make a lot of their money, they make off these television rights fees. The more TV they have, I presume, the more money they're going to make. With Raw being 3 hours instead of two, I assume that they're going to make more money off that episode each and every Monday. If that's the case, then maybe WWE did push for it. Here's another reason. January 26, 1998. is the day that WCW Monday Nitro officially went to 3 hours on TNT each and every Monday night. Now, WCW didn't die just because Nitro went to 3 hours. And WCW didn't die, actually, for another 3 years. But it was later in 98, I think 99 is really when things really started to go south for WCW. But the move to 3 hours ultimately contributed to the death of the company because it was just way too much television. It was that oversaturation. That's what it was. And as Nitro got worse, it was one thing when Nitro at its peak. Nitro was a pretty good wrestling show. They gave you a little bit of everything. They gave you some cruiserweight action. They gave you, you know, you had the mid-carders in the show. They had a lot of main eventers that they stole from WWF. And they used that to their advantage. Nitro would give you a little bit of everything. And at one point, it felt like, you know what, 3 hours isn't even enough to get all these guys in. They had a roster. I mean, the amount of people they had under contract at one point was just astonishing. But ultimately, it contributed to the death of the company. It was too much. The WWE roster now is nothing like what that WCW roster was at that point in time, just in terms of the sheer number of people under contract. If you look at the WWE roster right now, it is very thin on main event talent. There's talent, but there's not enough big-name talent. And they've got a shit ton of these developmental guys that they're starting to bring up, and I think that's great, but anybody who actually thinks they're going to turn the first hour of Raw into FCW from, you know, Full Sail University, give me a break. That's not what they're going to do. So again, the roster is relatively thin. Even though they call it Raw Super Show, you do have some SmackDown guys on there. It just feels like filling up 3 hours every week is going to be a challenge. And you look at the example WCW set, and nothing is learned. Nothing is learned. Now let's talk about the good reasons, now that I've gotten most of the bad stuff out of the way. This would presume that WWE would actually consider these ideas. Again, the reason that I'm negative on this move is because I don't think they're going to do this. But there are potential reasons why this could be a good move. For example, I described in episode 127 of The Sound Off, if you go back and listen to that, that was the whole episode that I did on my WWE business plan. If I were in charge, if Vince, you know, died and put me in charge, which I'm sure is going to happen one day, of course. What would I do? Things I would change, people I would get rid of, people I would bring in, different concepts. One thing I described is some sort of pre-show, like a Raw pre-show on Mondays, but model it after sport. I'm not talking about those old free-for-all pay-per-view pre-shows with Todd Pettengill and all that. Okay, I'm talking about a real pre-show where you have like a set up maybe in the backstage area or something, and you've got your announcers or Jim Ross as like the moderator, like an NFL pre-show type thing or something, where you make it feel really special, you know? And coming off a pay-per-view, maybe you'll have highlights from the pay-per-view and, you know, analyzing the key angles and what happened, what to look for on Raw that night, have interviews with some of the talents. That would be a really cool thing. Sports fans would enjoy that more than non-sports fans would. But I think people would get into it. It would make the show feel special. I'm all for making the show feel special. I'm all for making titles feel special. I'm all for making talent feel special. I'm all for everything that WWE seems to be against. I find that more and more often, which is depressing as all hell, because I'm still a fan. But it just seems like their ideas and concepts of the way things should be are counter to the way that I think it should be. And that's fine. You know, they're entitled to do whatever they want. They make a lot more money than I do, and they're still very successful. But I really think that that would be one way to go. And there was talk of some sort of Raw pre-show beginning at 8 o'clock. And maybe this is it. The only thing that they've said as far as how they're going to use the first hour or what they're going to do with the first hour is that they have all of these interactive aspects. So essentially, it sounds like they're going to turn the first hour into a modern-day Cyber Sunday, which was abandoned as a pay-per-view concept a long time ago because it flopped. But it almost sounds like they're going, I don't know about the Raw roulette wheel, but they'll have interactive fan voting probably via text messaging and through WWE.com and Twitter and Facebook. They're going to incorporate all of these social media aspects, which is another reason to worry, by the way. This could turn into the Twitter hour of Raw. But they're going to have all these interactive aspects and get you and me, the fans, involved in what matches you want to see, what stipulations you want to see, voting on this, voting on that. It sounds like it'll be the voting that then leads to matches in hour two and hour three, although I would expect they will have matches in Hour 1, but maybe not. They really haven't gone into too much detail yet, other than mentioning in this press release the whole interactive nature of the first hour. But they could go in the direction of the pre-show I talked about, and I would actually be in favor of that. I think that would be a kick-ass idea if they did it right. Another potential good reason to expand Raw to 3 hours gives them more time to feature cruiserweight talent, like Nitro did back in the day. So they could familiarize the audience with these guys for the new show they have planned for the network. I bring up the cruiserweights not as some old dated concept, oh come on, you know, why are you mentioning the cruiserweights? They have an idea for a cruiserweight show, for like a, I think it's anybody 200 pounds and under or something, for the new network. And they've already started contacting, quote, cruiserweight talents and indie talents for it. Well, if they already have this idea in their head for a new network show based on the cruiserweights, why wouldn't you want to start featuring some of that cruiserweight talent on your TV show and get people excited? So if your network ever actually does launch and you have this new show, people now are familiar with the cruiserweight talent and how exciting they are and how exciting their matches can be, and they may be more inclined to want to tune into your new network show. It's a win-win situation. You're strengthening the network while at the same time you're strengthening your flagship TV show. So that's another potential idea. Are they going to do that? I don't know. I don't think so. But back in the day when Nitro would start with a hot, you know, 20-minute cruiserweight match between Rey Mysterio Jr. and Lismark or Juventud or whoever, I mean, that was a pretty kick-ass idea on Eric Bischoff's part, and I will give him credit for that. I mean, I was more of a WWF fan back in the day than I was WCW, but I could watch those cruiserweight matches and just be blown away. And you would not see stuff like that on Raw. It actually forced WWF at the time to institute their own light heavyweight division, and they brought in people like Brian Christopher and Aguila and Takamichi Noku, and they had some great matches, but it wasn't like the WCW cruiserweight division. And they've neglected that over the last decade plus. They had their own light heavyweight division. They treated it like a joke. Well, here's a chance for you to bring it back and actually try to get people interested in it again. Another good reason to make Raw 3 hours? Longer matches. What's one of the things that you hear people on the internet all the time complain about? Short matches. The Divas, unfortunately, are the ones who get the short end of the stick more often than not. I mean, they're mad. It's just a joke. 30 seconds, 60 seconds. I timed the match on Monday at 1 minute 20 seconds, which may as well be a modern-day Iron Man match for the women. Well, you have an extra hour of the show now, and I know that in their minds, matches are boring, and people tune in because of segments like Big Show and Laurinaitis, and you know what? They're right. Over 1 million people tuned in for that, but I also think that if you take a match like John Cena and CM Punk, okay, from Money in the Bank last year, or even Brock Lesnar and John Cena from Extreme Rules, which was a different type of match, but it was still a match. It was a competitive fight, and people were into it. Punk and Cena had one of the all-time great WWE matches of this decade, as far as I'm concerned, thanks to the fans in Chicago, but they had a kick-ass match at Money in the Bank last year. The only thing that makes me sad is that that match was relegated to a pay-per-view that about 150,000 people ordered. Well, you've got 4.5 to 5 million people watching Raw every single week, and I don't want them to start giving away pay-per-view matches every week. But if you had more time, take two guys like a Brian and a Punk who are going to go in there and have a kick-ass match and tear the house down for 20, 30 minutes. You give us a match like that on Raw every now and then, guess what? People are going to start to get excited about watching matches. They're not going to tune out because they think they're boring. They've been conditioned by you to think that matches are boring because they're not important. Wins and losses don't matter. Titles mean as little now, I think, as they ever have in the history of WWE. I honestly believe that. And most matches are also very short. They're over in a heartbeat, except on pay-per-view, where they get more time. Well, now with an extra hour of Raw, you can start giving these matches more time. You can have, let's say, in that first hour, one gigantic 20 to 25-minute match. They do that on SmackDown. Like I said, apparently Orton and Sheamus had close to half an hour to go in there and have a great match on Friday night. Why can't you do that on Raw? With an extra hour, now you can. So that's another potentially good reason to expand the show. And one more thing I thought of, which will never happen, but I was just thinking. And I'm going to talk about NXT in a second, actually, just briefly, because they had their tapings this past week. The new announce crew for NXT is Jim Ross and William Regal. And I've joked before, when I first mentioned that the two of them have started working together, why can't we have a draft show where all we do is just draft Jim Ross and William Regal over to Raw? in exchange for Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. Can't we just swap them? How awesome would that be? Well, what about taking the first hour of Raw and having a different announce crew? WCW would do that back in the day, and so did WWE at one point. But WCW would have, the first hour announced. I don't think it was Tony Schiavone. I'm trying to think who it was, if it wasn't Tony. Or maybe it was Tony, but he was with Mike Tenay and Mongo, and then at some point they switched. But they would switch the announcers, is the point. They would have a different announce crew for each hour. And that was when Nitro was 2 hours, I think, not even three. Why can't you do something like that now? We have to sit through Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, more so Michael Cole, for 3 hours? What did we do to deserve this? Why are we being punished? Why not have JR and Regal call the first hour of Raw, either just, you know, as a regular show with the current Raw stars, or incorporate some of those FCW, NXT developmental talents like a Dean Ambrose or a Seth Rollins or whoever into the first hour? I'm not saying make the first hour the developmental hour, but have more of those young guys with their matches and segments being called by JR and Regal, which in turn will help promote NXT if you want people to watch that show, even if it is on the website. And then at the 9 o'clock hour, you have your big pyro, and you revert to Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, and they take over for the rest of the show. It's just an idea, just to change things up a little bit, give that first hour a little bit of a fresh face. I'd be in favor of any of these ideas. So the point is, there are reasons that moving Raw to 3 hours could be a good thing. For me, I can't speak for everybody. For me, it's still going to be an inconvenience. Just having to sit through 3 hours of wrestling. I don't come home from work early, okay? I'm sure people come home much later than I do. But on most weeks, if I'm first coming home from work at 7:30, 8 o'clock, you know, and I want to eat something or take a shower or whatever the case may be, I do that before Raw starts at 9 o'clock because I want to make sure I'm watching Raw when it goes on the air. Now you're telling me that every single week Raw starts an hour early. So if I feel compelled to watch the entire show so I don't miss anything, it's just a huge inconvenience. But again, that's just me. Maybe for somebody else, they get home from work earlier than I do and they don't care. They'll watch 4 hours of Raw. It's going to be different for everybody. For me, that's another reason why I don't like this idea. But the point is, there are some good reasons why this could be a good move. I just don't think that WWE is going to take any of those ideas. I think they're going to continue to book Raw the way they always book Raw. Raw, hour number one is going to look just like hour number two, and hour number three only with some interactive elements. That's what I think. Let them prove me wrong. But on the surface, I think this is a terrible idea. And I think this has the potential to do some really great long-term damage to the company if they don't handle it properly. And they just maintain the status quo and Raw's Raw, and they have a certain way that they write and they script and they book, and they're going to continue to do it that way, and everybody else and the internet be damned. Well, we're going to find out real quick whether or not this is a good idea or not. We know that it's going to bring the Raw rating down, because every time they have a 3-hour Raw, the rating, that first hour, people either forget or they just don't tune in. Now, I'm sure that's going to be a big problem for them at first. After a month or two, they're not going to have any excuses if that first hour is getting a 2.4 and the rest of the show is getting a normal rating, whatever that may be. That's going to be a huge problem. WWE's not going to be happy about that, and USA's not going to be happy about that. Why USA is even allowing this, or if USA pushed for it, I don't understand. I think NCIS, or whatever show it is now, airs before Raw. There are weeks when NCIS will outdraw Raw. That first hour before Raw goes on the air usually does pretty good for the network, and they're airing reruns of shows that already aired on network TV. So why they would want to do this, there must be other reasons at play here. Whether it's not like Raw gets such great advertising money, I would imagine. Maybe it does. Maybe it's a matter of advertising dollars. I don't know of any real blue-chip sponsors that WWE has. I don't see car companies advertising with WWE. So I'm sure there's got to be a reason. That reason to me remains unknown. Why USA would actually want an extra hour of Raw every Monday night is a mystery to me. Maybe somebody else can explain it. But there you go. Raw's moving to 3 hours on July 23rd, and we're going to find out, I think, pretty quickly whether or not this was a good move or not. And who knows? They say it's a permanent move. You know what? if this doesn't work out, if it's a strain on the company, if the ratings actually go down instead of going up, who's to say that by the end of the year or next year that Raw is going to be right back to 2 hours? They say permanent, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be permanent. So I guess we'll find out. Conversely, there was actually a similar announcement, big TV announcement made this week by TNA, which I actually am in favor of. So I'm actually going to give TNA its props this week as opposed to WWE. Unfortunately for TNA, it came on the same day that WWE announced that Raw was moving to 3 hours. So they stole some thunder from TNA, which announced that Impact Wrestling will be going live on Spike TV every Thursday for the summer, starting May 31st at its new start time of 8 p.m. That's the day that Impact moves to 8. It'll be from 8 to 10 as far as the time slot is concerned, no longer from 9 to 11. They're bumping it up an hour because they say they want to target, you know, there's an audience ripe to watch their product, kind of a family audience that will watch their product if it starts at 8 o'clock, and that may be true on some level. I think a lot of it also has to do with them wanting to get a head start on the NFL, because this fall there's going to be a lot of NFL games that start around 8:20, 8:30, 9 o'clock. So that's a big part of it, too, because if it comes down to TNA versus the NFL, TNA is going to get demolished, and TNA may get demolished anyway. So they already announced the time slot change. Now they announced that Impact is going live for the summer. And who knows? If it does well enough, it may become a permanent move. I actually think it's a great move. Unlike when they moved to Monday nights opposite WWE, which I also thought at the time was a risk worth taking, and it backfired on them, this is a win-win situation. Assuming that Spike TV is helping foot most, if not all, of the costs that are involved in a live production, because otherwise it's a very costly move for TNA. But I assume that Spike is at least helping them, if not bankrolling the whole thing. First, it gives them something special to promote the new time change right out of the gate on May 31st. Instead of just saying, well, you know, Impact this week starts at 8, now they can say that not only does Impact start at 8, but Impact is going to be live. So it gives them something else that's kind of special to hook people in to that first show on the 31st. But there's potential drawbacks as well. From what I understand, there's a lot of mistakes that get made during those TNA tapings that get edited out of the final product in post-production. Sometimes they'll tape segments out of order for Impact, although I think that that was more of a common practice when Vince Russo was writing the TV. But yeah, I suppose it may also be an inconvenience for some guys who are used to taping earlier in the week. Excuse me, when TNA has tapings, usually it's on Mondays and Tuesdays. Sometimes on Wednesdays, but I think it's usually Mondays and Tuesdays, and then they don't tape TV usually for another 2 or 3 weeks. So a lot of those guys, the main event guys, who fly into Orlando and tape, they fly in, they tape TV, and they go home. And, I mean, they may have other house shows and promotional appearances to make for TNA. Not everybody does, but it's very convenient for them. Now, they'll have to be in Orlando every Thursday. But, I mean, at the end of the day, these are minor points. This is not a big deal. I think it's a good move for TNA. There's an element of live television that makes it more exciting. And, hey, if it fails to move ratings or improve the product, they just go right back to taping the shows in the fall. And aside from us bozos on the internet, nobody has to know. It's not like they're going to have to make an announcement on TV that says, hey, summer's over. Starting next week, Impact's going to go back to being taped. They don't have to say shit. They just go back quietly to being taped, and things go back to the way they were. But that's if it doesn't work out. I think it will work out. I'm not saying Impact's going to go from a 1-0 rating to a 1-7, but I think the potential is there. And TNA has just been in such a rut. They just seem so unimportant. And I've seen some of the product lately. I saw part of Impact on Thursday. They've got some good stuff going on. There's just no buzz. So this is a chance for them to get some buzz going for their product. Now, the other thing they announced this week was that Brooke Hogan, Hulk Hogan's daughter, is coming to Impact Wrestling. She will be the new head of the Knockouts division, a position formerly occupied by Karen Jarrett. And Brooke will make her debut on that first live Impact on May 31st, which, again, they're really stacking that show. But it's risky with the show being live, having Brooke, who's, you know, an untested commodity. You don't know what you're going to get out of her. She may be really good. She may suck. But she's going to be on live television, so you're throwing her right into the shark tank right out of the gate. You know, so it's a risky move, but hey, the way I look at it, if she fucks up, at least we can laugh at her. I'm actually not as negative on this as other people have been. I think a lot of people expected me to go on a diatribe about Hulk Hogan bringing his daughter in. And I mean, look, at the end of the day, is it bullshit? Of course it's bullshit. bringing Brooke in as a regular character on TV, but it's nepotism. It's been around in wrestling for decades. It's been around, I think, everywhere for decades. Any office environment, any business, people bring their son, their daughter, they give them preferential treatment. It happens all the time. Something I think everybody can relate to. But that's nepotism. You know, bookers have always tried to get their kids over, sometimes with great success and other times not so much. The way I look at it, when Stephanie McMahon first started out as a character on WWE television, I'm sure there were a lot of people who rolled their eyes. Now, I didn't. I thought it was cool to see the McMahon kids on TV because I had never seen them before. But to be fair, Shane McMahon busted his ass as a performer. And the whole, you know, Mean Street Posse act was just gold. That whole period, anything WWE touched back then turned to gold. But Stephanie, I mean, come on, it's the boss's daughter. She's got no business being on TV. Give me a break. Stephanie was a horrible actress at first. And then she got better. She got more comfortable in front of the camera. And she became a great performer in her role on the show. And she was easy on the eyes, which also helps. Look at Vicky Guerrero. Speaking of easy on the eyes, that may apply to Stephanie. It doesn't necessarily apply to Vicky. But a lot of you may argue that Vicky is still a horrible performer. And I would say that those people just don't get wrestling. She may not be the most articulate person in the world. She may not be a master thespian. She may not be a Playboy model. But Vicky was pretty goddamn atrocious at first when she came in. And what happened is that she got more comfortable in front of a camera. She embraced her role as the hated villain. And who would have ever thought the widow of Eddie Guerrero, such a beloved figure who died, his widow would be brought in as a character and would grow to be one of the most hated characters on the entire show. But she embraced it. She would get nuclear heat when she would walk out in front of an audience. She still does, but her act, I think, has cooled off considerably from what she used to be when she was the SmackDown GM and she was with Edge. The common denominator with Stephanie and Vicky is that both had family ties to wrestling and were around it for most of their lives. My point is, how bad can Brooke really be? The girl has been around wrestling her entire life. Her father is Hulk Hogan, for Christ's sake. You would think that she learned something along the way besides, you know, fucking with other people's pushes and saying brother every 5 seconds. She may turn out to be pretty good in the role, just like Karen Jarrett was. Then again, for every Karen Jarrett or Shane McMahon, there's a David Flair or an Eric Watts, so maybe this will be a complete disaster. But at least if it's a complete disaster, it'll be a complete disaster on live television. And I'll have some pretty good material for the sound off. Other TNA news, Gunnar announced on Twitter this week that he just signed a new 3-year deal with the company. And referee Earl Hebner, who just celebrated a birthday, also announced that he will be with TNA through 2013 and will likely end his career there. Earl's created a nice little gig for himself there in TNA. It makes me sad just because I will always look at Earl Hebner as the senior head, you know, referee for WWE, and he was there for so many years and involved in so many different angles. Not only matches, like matches he's worked, he has been incorporated himself into so many different storylines from the moment he came into the company. It was Earl and Dave, the evil twin Hebner brothers, who screwed Hulk Hogan out of the WWF Championship, and Hogan picked up Earl his first night in. Remember that Saturday night's main event special, or it was the main event, or whatever it was, and he chucked. I mean, he just absolutely chucked Earl Hebner out of the ring, and Earl was supposed to be caught by Andre and DiBiase on the outside, but he got thrown so hard and so far by Hogan into the aisleway that he actually overshot all three guys. It was just Andre, DiBiase, and Virgil. And Earl just flew over them and just landed on the ground, and that looked like it sucked. That was a nice way to say, hey, how are you? Welcome to WWF. But then, you know, Montreal, and then even he did this angle once with Triple H, where I think Triple H and Stephanie fired him, and anyway, all the different things that Earl did during his run in WWE. And for those of you who aren't aware, I think what happened is would have been 2005, most likely, 05 or 06, I think sometime in 05, it was discovered that he and his brother Dave, who once refereed, and once Earl became a referee, Dave kind of transitioned into a backstage agent role, and he had been with WWF for many years as well, that the Hebner brothers, who I think had their own store in, I don't remember where, but I think they sold wrestling merchandise, but they were supposedly selling unauthorized WWE merchandise that the company was not aware of. When the company found out that they were selling unauthorized merchandise, they fired them. Which sounds kind of harsh, but if it's true, and it's my understanding that it probably was true, you can't do that. You know, you can't just sell unauthorized merchandise for the company you work for. It's kind of like here in New York, there was a big controversy many months ago where the clubhouse handler, whatever his title was, Charlie Samuels, who worked in the New York Mets, who played baseball. For those of you international listeners who don't know anything about the Mets, they're a baseball team, and Charlie Samuels was kind of in charge of the Mets clubhouse for, 20-something years, 30 years, long time. Everybody affiliated with the team knew Charlie. He was a nice guy. All the players knew him and everything, and it came out that he was doing some stuff that he shouldn't have been doing. I think there was an issue with gambling and possibly taking things from the clubhouse and whatnot, and he got fired. And not only did he get fired, I think he was charged with something as well. But the point is, there's a guy who had a long career with an organization and did something he shouldn't have done, and he got fired for it. And so Earl found himself a home in TNA, and he is the senior official in TNA. His son Brian, who had started refereeing in WWF, obviously wasn't going to stay once they fired his dad, so he came to TNA with Earl. And that's where they're going to be, most likely, until Earl is done with wrestling. But I always felt that Earl should be inducted into the Hall of Fame. They don't think they've inducted any referees into the WWE Hall of Fame. I feel like there are certain referees, for example, like Tommy Young, who was more of a, he was a old school kind of NWA referee. But they induct people from all over the wrestling world. I think Tommy Young is deserving of a Hall of Fame induction. Dick Worley, who passed away recently, was another famous referee. He's probably deserving of a Hall of Fame induction. So is Earl Hebner. I think he really does. Earl and Dave probably both deserve to go into the Hall of Fame one day. So hopefully, once his career in TNA has come to an end, he will be appropriately honored. Because you can't ignore the many years of service that he did give your organization. But anyway, happy belated birthday to Earl Hebner, who, by the way, does admit, damn right, I did do it. That being Screw Bret Hart. He actually sells these shirts at the TNA house shows, of which I've been to before. He comes out. His act is great because he's made up with Bret and all that, and this is just part of his act now. But when he comes out at the house shows, he's booed. People to this day will still chant, "You screwed Bret." It's a chant that just will never die. And he embraced it. I'm sure at first it bothered him, but over the years he's warmed to it and has realized that he can make some money off it. So he has this t-shirt that he sells, or has TNA sell for him at the house shows, that says, it's like a referee, it's got the referee stripes on it, and it's like, damn right I did, and he sells it for like $10, and he comes out doing the Bret Hart pose with the arms outstretched. It's just great. So anyway, that's your TNA news. Let's talk briefly here really quick about NXT. NXT taped 4 weeks of television shows at their new location, Full Sail University down in Florida. They taped about a month's worth of TV shows in front of 500 people, which saw both Tyler Black and Cassius Ohno, both ROH alum, each make their debut. Dusty Rhodes was announced as the new NXT commissioner, replacing William Regal, who was there doing commentary, as I mentioned, with Jim Ross. For the love of God, every time I say Jim Ross and William Regal together, I just think, why are they not on my television on Monday nights? It just does not make any sense. So they taped a month's worth of TV. I'm not sure when this will air. Again, I know in other countries, NXT, I believe, still airs on television. And here they air NXT on WWE.com. So I don't know if in the next week or two these episodes will start popping up on .com or what the deal is. I'm very curious to see what the new arena looks like. It's small. Again, they only have a couple of hundred people. But they have, I think, a little ramp. They have a little mini-tron. They try to make it look professional. And I'm just dying to see these guys, break out. And come on, Dusty Rhodes as the commissioner. Come on, you can't beat that. Dusty Rhodes, I thought, did a hell of a job that one time he was the guest host on Raw. It's too bad it was just for 1 week. So that's your NXT update. I know there was a big controversy before WrestleMania where some news leaked that they were shutting down FCW and relocating it to Stamford, and WWE freaked out and said, no, that's not true at all. Everything's all, randy-dandy with the developmental territory. And then Triple H, they had go on .com and say, well, after WrestleMania, we're going to be making some changes, but we're not going to get into what that is. Well, the move to Full Sail University was one of those changes. But from what I understand, there still is some sort of connection with Stanford where there may be people relocated to Stanford. When you have some reputable wrestling websites who go out and make or break, I should say, a big story like that, more often than not, from the reputable sources, there's some truth to it. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire, as the old expression goes, and WWE just freaks out whenever they get scooped, whether it's by The Observer or PW Insider or The Torch or whatever it may be. And so I love the fact that they just... It wouldn't surprise me if actually that was the plan and WWE just said, fuck, you know, these websites already spoiled it, so now we can't do it. Let's pretend like we're going to keep these guys down in Florida just out of spite, and we'll move them to Stanford in 6 months. That way we can say that the websites don't know what they're talking about and they got it wrong. I could easily see Vince McMahon doing that. So anyway, there's your NXT update. Let's get into some sound-off shout-outs here. We're kind of running low on time. First, I want to mention Jacob from Wichita, who is an avid listener of the show. You might want to change your email password. Your account has been hacked. I've been getting a bunch of bullshit emails from you that are going directly into my spam folder. So you might want to take care of that. Got a shout-out here that goes out to Dan Trower in Hertford, UK. His grandfather, Ron, recently suffered a stroke. And apparently the two of them are both fans of the podcast, so my thoughts are with them this week. That is, that's awful. I hope Ron is able to pull through. He did want to know, Dan did, if I had the power in WWE and TNA, what would I change? And my simple answer to that question is, everyone in power. I'd kick all the bums out, all of them, and just start from scratch. That's the easiest recipe for change, is just to get rid of everybody and bring in your own team, kind of like what Paul Heyman was going to do in TNA, and just start from scratch. And this comes from Marcus. Marcus says, I have to ask you for a shout-out for my firstborn baby boy, Linus, who was born on Monday, May 14th, and of course to his awesome mother, Trin, who pushed that little fella out in a record time of 45 minutes while wearing the Mark Henry All Will Suffer Hall of Pain shirt. That is, that's quite the image there. So, big respect to her. That comes from Marcus, the Australian-Norwegian family in Tonsberg, Norway, he says. Marcus, Trin, Linus, and their German Shepherd, Trixie, who has a CM Punk collar. So this is obviously a wrestling family. Probably a family that's very happy that Raw is going to 3 hours. And as I said before, not to belabor the point, but I am a wrestling fan. I will always be a wrestling fan. The reason I get so agitated and animated sometimes when it comes to stupid shit like this is because I do care, and I do want to be able to sit down in front of my television every week and actually enjoy and have fun and, you know, text my friends or whatever and say, wow, you know, did you see what happened or what's going to happen next? And again, my fear with 3 hours of Raw is that it's very difficult on some weeks to sit through 2 hours. So unless there's some big change in philosophy that I'm unaware of that WWE is going to undertake here, my fear is that it's just going to be an extra hour of the same old shit that we get every week, which is not a recipe for success. I think big changes are needed in WWE, and adding another hour of television on Monday nights is not going to fix anything. If anything, it's just going to make it worse. We'll find out whether I'm right or if they're right. Talk to me in 6 months, and I will gladly admit if I was wrong. If I enjoy Raw thoroughly every week and they're doing a hell of a job, I will admit I was wrong. Something tells me that you will not be hearing me admit that I was wrong. Let's take a few quick questions here as part of the mailbag. If you have questions and shout-outs to send in to me, email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. This first question comes from Miguel from Puerto Rico. Love your show. Been listening since episode 140 or so. Although I've downloaded and listened to all the available episodes online, going back to 43. Since WWE made the announcement last Thursday about the 1,000th Raw going to 3 hours permanently, everybody has been complaining about this. I have another point of view. For years, the NFL has been making its mark on WWE ratings, and Monday Night Football has been dominant. I believe this move is to try to minimize this effect by having the audience tune in 1 hour early every week before the NFL season starts, maybe a way of making fans accustomed to tuning into Raw instead of football. I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think there's other reasons at play here, whether it was Vince or if it was WWE, or rather USA. I don't think football factored too heavily into their decision. And the thing is, much like with TNA, and I hope TNA does well because, again, I think going live and all that is a good move for them. That is a move that was done in large part to counteract the effect of the NFL, and I think it's not going to make a damn bit of difference. I think the people who are going to watch football, you don't understand something. I don't think people outside the U.S. have a real great concept of how big the NFL is in this country. I'm not prepared to say that the NFL, in terms of popularity or culture, is quite as big as it would be for people, let's say, outside this country and soccer. I know soccer is like, it's like a religion in Europe and other countries for certain people. I wouldn't necessarily say the NFL is on par with that, but it's kind of the equivalent of that in this country, in that football surpassed baseball a long time ago as being America's pastime. It is very, very popular. It makes billions of dollars each and every single year. People love football. And Raw going to 3 hours is not going to stop most, maybe some, but it will not stop most, a large majority, I would argue, of people who are going to watch football anyway. Raw can start 4 hours early. They can get a 2 hour jump on Monday Night Football, and it would not matter. The people who in September, October, November are big football fans who are going to want to watch football are going to watch football no matter what. Even if Raw goes to 3 hours and that first hour is awesome, those people are still going to watch football. They'll DVR maybe the first hour of Raw, and they'll watch football. This question comes from David, your Solomonster. What do you think about Triple H as a performer overall? How would you rate him, his mic skills, ring work, and other attributes? I think Triple H is very good. I think at his peak, I think the best Triple H period was when he became champion and was put over very strongly by Mick Foley in 2000. 2000 into 2001, in my opinion, was Triple H at his prime, his physical prime. His mic skills have actually improved over time. I talked about the Reign of Terror in 2002, 2003, 2004. His promos were boring. His promos were repetitive. They sucked. But Triple H now, when he comes out, you know, he may say stupid things. He may be a little too snarky for his own taste sometimes and try to put people down. But he's a very articulate, very funny guy when he wants to be. So his mic skills are excellent. His in-ring work, I always thought, was very good. You know, he was never a technical wrestler. He was never he wouldn't put on a mat clinic for anybody. But he modeled himself after Ric Flair, and it shows in his work. You know, he was a pretty good bump taker. He never did anything overly risky. But he was a good wrestler. He was a very good wrestler. I would not say excellent. I think people have an overinflated view of Triple H even back when he was good. You know, they won't give him any credit now. They think everything he does now is stupid. He's just a politician. And a lot of that is true, although I think people do rag on him a little too much. But they'll say, oh, back then he was the shit, man. He was the number one guy, and he was excellent. He was, you know, this and that. And I thought he was very, very good. And my favorite version of Triple H, again, was 2000 into 2001. I thought he had great matches. Foley put him over like $1 million, which puzzles me that Triple H, in later interviews in recent years, has said that, well, you know, nobody ever put me over when I was on my way up, which I always, again, found to be a very odd comment to make. It's like, hello? Did we forget a certain period of your career that was kind of important? There was one guy that put you over like $1 million. But he had great matches with Foley, great matches with The Rock. He had pretty good matches with Austin and obviously Undertaker in later years and Shawn Michaels. But anybody could have a great match with Shawn Michaels, except Great Khali. But I thought he was very good. That's my overall opinion of Triple H. And his mic skills have improved. His ring work, not so much. But he's old. He's 42 now. His ring work, I would not expect his ring work to be as good now as it used to be. But that was my favorite version of Triple H. Matt writes in with a question about Randy Orton. He mentioned to me how good the Orton-Sheamus match was on SmackDown this week. He says, their match prompted a question. I've repeatedly noticed that Randy Orton looks either hurt or in a tremendous amount of pain during many of his recent matches. For example, there's a spot during the SmackDown match where he superplexes Sheamus. It looks as if he takes the brunt of the impact, and afterwards he sits up and looks almost dazed and has a hard time crawling back to Sheamus to cover him. My question is he selling the fact that he's hurt during matches to make his opponents look strong, or is he working through some major back or neck injury? Or does he just have a more wild, quote, put your body on the line style of wrestling that is very Sabu or Foley-esque? When I first read your question, and Matt has some great questions when he writes in, but when I read, does Randy Orton have a wild, put your body on the line style of wrestling like Sabu or Mick Foley, I laughed. I laughed uproariously at that. Randy Orton is about as far from what I would call a put your body on the line style of wrestler than maybe anybody else in WWE. Certainly any other main eventer. Easily. Of all the main event guys in WWE right now, Orton is the absolute antithesis of that. Orton goes in there and does everything he can to protect himself for a variety of reasons. I mean, Orton has had some injuries before. He's broken his collarbone twice, which is an injury that he's lucky it hasn't happened again since then. And it could very well happen. You know, once you break your collarbone once, from what I understand, it's very easy to re-break. And if his collarbone was to start breaking again, that could be a career ender for him. You know, and he's had some other injuries, I think, as well. I don't know if he's ever had any neck issues. I'm not aware of any injury that Orton is currently nursing. I know he at one point, I think, did have some neck issues now that I think about it. He did have the back issues as well, but that was earlier this year. I can't remember now exactly what the injury was. It might have been a disc in his back. If you recall, Orton was out of action for several weeks and then actually came back a lot quicker. There was some thought that Randy Orton might have to miss WrestleMania this year. It was a big story, and then Orton ended up coming back like 4 or 5 weeks later. So I just think it's an issue of Orton selling. Orton is actually pretty good at that. His mannerisms and the way he kind of moves around in the ring, he can tell a story almost with his face and with his movements. But this idea that Orton is the kind of person that has a put-your-body-on-the-line kind of reckless style as a performer, it is the exact opposite. Orton is, if anything, overly cautious in the ring. He will not put himself in a position, if he can help it, to take any sort of big, ridiculously sick bump that he doesn't have to take, you know, jumping on the thumbtacks like he did with Mick Foley back in 04 and all that, and or taking big bumps off a ladder or something. I don't think you'll ever see Randy Orton take big, unnecessary bumps like that, unless it's done safely. He just doesn't strike me as the kind of performer, I don't want to say that's not willing to, but I think he's had some injuries before, and he just does not want to put himself in a position to be hurt again. It's definitely not bad. That's definitely not the answer to the question. I just think it's selling on his part, and probably being overly cautious, just because he's had some back issues in the last couple of months that I'm sure he doesn't want to re-aggravate. This question comes from Chris, actually two questions. Number one, do you think WWE may try to intervene in John Cena's divorce by possibly offering some money to his soon-to-be ex-wife to keep her quiet? They have a lot of money invested in Cena, and a nasty divorce could possibly affect the marketability of its biggest star. We don't know what happened behind closed doors, and it's none of our business anyway, but this seems like a problem of the worst kind for WWE. It's an interesting idea. WWE could do that, I suppose, if they wanted to, and try to keep it hush-hush, put a gag order on her and say, here's some money now, you know, keep your mouth shut. They've certainly stepped in to help performers before. Vince McMahon, for example, has helped Ric Flair probably multiple times, but there was one point, at least, where Vince McMahon helped Ric Flair pay off some debts that he had to the IRS. And I don't think Vince would just do that with anybody, but he did with Flair. And there's some, I'm sure, other examples that one could think of times that the company has stepped in to try to defuse certain situations. And I'm not saying they will. I don't think they will, is my answer to your question. But could they? Absolutely they could. Second question here. Do you think the payoff of the Big Johnny angle will somehow involve The Rock? Funkman seems to mention the people, power to the people, and people power all the time. It just seems like it would be a logical move to have the people's champion involved in this somehow, but using logic and watching WWE is not the best thing to do. I don't think The Rock will have anything to do with this angle. They certainly haven't dropped any hints aside from this whole, you know, people power. Yes, he is mentioning the people, and maybe they have The Rock pop up unannounced on an episode of Raw and just, you know, tear into Laurinaitis or something. To do that, though, would seem to align Rock and Cena, because if Cena is going to lose this weekend at the pay-per-view and continue to be tortured and harassed by John Laurinaitis, to have The Rock come back at some point to kind of take down Big Johnny would almost mean that he's aligning with John Cena, which, again, I don't think people still, even after their match at WrestleMania, want to see The Rock and Cena together in any way, shape, or form. You know, even after the WrestleMania, when Rock came out on Raw for that promo where he talked about going for the WWE title, he was still poking fun and cracking jokes at John Cena's expense. So there's no love lost there in storyline. Why Rock would align in any way with Cena doesn't really make any sense to me, so I don't think that's going to happen. But anyway, that comes from Chris, who has been a listener of the show since episode 10. Wow, he says, yeah, kept seeing you on SE Scoops and decided to finally listen to the sound off and have been hooked ever since. So thank you to Chris for that. Last question here comes from Jay. This is a very interesting letter. He says, I used to live in New York where I grew up. Back in the 90s, I was a huge WWF fan. I used to buy the house shows on video from tape traders and was extremely disappointed when I got them. The VHS quality was poor from generational loss. I used to pay $20 per tape and felt ripped off. Back then, $20 was a lot for a 16-year-old with no money. In 1995, I got my first VHS-C camcorder and decided I was going to tape my own house shows from Nassau Coliseum in Madison Square Garden. I knew it was illegal, but I wasn't going to sell them. It was just for my friends and my personal entertainment. I did get caught a few times, and security took the tapes away. We attended shows from 95 to 96 and recorded a few, and the infamous click curtain call incident from the May 19th, 1996 Madison Square Garden show was one of the ones that we taped. The footage that you saw on television is ours. I can prove it. I don't know if anybody has claimed to be the recorder, but after seeing the footage on numerous DVDs, I did find it cool that it made its way around and is still talked about. I just wanted to get your thoughts. In this day and age of cell phones and pocket cams, everyone tapes everything, it seems, and it gets posted on YouTube. There's always a camera around. What would have happened if we never made copies and it got around? Could we have made a huge profit from it? We know we own the video, but what was recorded we obviously didn't own, meaning the WWF product. So that comes from Jay, who takes credit for the infamous curtain call footage that they actually aired on Raw, and he's right. I mean, they put it on DVDs and stuff, and it shows Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Kevin Nash, Ramon, and I don't remember now if 1-2-3 Kid was in that footage. I could look it up. But anyway, it was the Click embracing at Madison Square Garden. It was the last night for Hall and Nash, who were on their way to WCW, and it was made a big deal by, I think it might have been Bret Hart, actually, who complained to management saying that, you know, this is not right. You have heels and baby faces in the middle of the ring, and they're killing kayfabe, and it became a whole big brouhaha. So anyway, this was Jay's footage, and he wanted to know if, you know, he can make a huge profit from it had the footage never been released. My understanding is this. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm hoping, I'm mentioning the question here for other people who may know the law and who may be better equipped to answer this question, but my sense of it is that I think WWE and probably the building management makes it very clear that you're prohibited from tape recording or video recording any of the footage from the shows. I know more so now even than in 1996, they're very strict about that. Maybe back then they weren't as strict, although he did say he got caught a couple of times. So therefore, by recording the footage, which is already a prohibited act, I'm not sure that you could have made much, if anything, off of it. And had you, they may have even had a grounds to bring some sort of injunction or suit against you, because now you're trying to profit off illegally obtained footage. So I would say no, but if anybody disagrees or knows something that I don't, write in, let me know, and I'll pass that information along to Jay. So it's an interesting question, because they make it very clear, especially now when you go, you cannot videotape anything. It's illegal. It's not allowed. So this idea that I could, you know, videotape something, and it's one thing to then turn around and put it on free for YouTube for everybody to see, but to try to make money off of it and try to turn a profit off something that you weren't allowed to do in the first place would seem like a way to get yourself in hot water more so than make any money off it. But if I find out anything from somebody who would be in the know, I will let you know. That's going to do it for the mailbag this week. If you have questions for me, please send them in to thesolemonster@gmail.com. I am a little backed up right now, but I'm going to try to get to everybody either directly or on the air in the future. So do email me there. Follow me on Twitter, @solemonster is my handle. I'll probably be doing some more live tweeting during the pay-per-view and or Raw. And any relevant information as far as SC Scoops Live is concerned, the call-in number for anybody who may want to participate in the show, follow me on Twitter. I should have information up about that. Facebook as well, facebook.com/TheSolemonster. Send me a friend request on there if you want to be part of our little community and the ongoing discussion thread both tonight for the pay-per-view and Monday night during Raw, which we have every single week. It is very entertaining. So friend me on there. And, of course, you can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes. Leave a review for us if you want to. You subscribe, and the show is automatically downloaded for you. It is free. It does not cost you anything. So please subscribe in iTunes as well. Episode 219 is done. I am finished. I have things to do before the pay-per-view tonight. I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. Until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll be back here Memorial Day weekend at some point with episode 220 of the Solemonster Sounds Off. Thank you, as always, for your support. Without you guys, I would not be doing this show. So thank you very much. Please join us for SC Scoops Live 1 hour before Raw this Monday night on SCScoops.com. Until next time, we'll see you next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com.